This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. Today, as we celebrate the start of spring, I talk with Carnegie Mellon University Assistant Professor of Music, Rob Fallon, about spring's influence on classical music.
Here we are in your office, and even outside, it's nice that we're not looking at snow. We're looking at some signs of spring, a little greenery on the rooftop garden. And what does it sound like in music? That's what we're going to talk about.
Music is full of references to spring, and composers in the classical tradition have typically represented spring with birdsong. Birds offer the most musical rendition of nature. And so, yeah, I would like to share with you three different pieces, one by Antonio Vivaldi, a second one by Igor Stravinsky, and a third by Olivier Messiaen.
Excellent.
Vivaldi wrote his own sonnet after he wrote the music, but they go together. So his sonnet goes like this. Spring has arrived, and happily the birds welcome it in joyful song. If you notice at the end there, the performance really draws out the notes and kind of slows down. I think that's important in a good performance because it puts you in a non-human world. It brings you away from the metrical regularity, the sort of human predictability of normal concert music, and makes you aware that you're listening to a completely different species here. So here is Vivaldi's portrayal of a brook. So brooks are very active in the springtime. Snow melts, it comes down from the mountains, and the brooks are full of water. And finally, Vivaldi's depiction of spring ends with not a bird or a brook, but a human presence in the form of a dance. And here you can hear the bagpipes putting out their long drones and a very happy peasant dance.
It reminds me of something like Jane Austen's Emma, you know, being out in the field with ribbons flying as you do some kind of country line dance.
There's something about it that sounds very country, very old-fashioned. I'd like to turn now to Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. He was Russian, and he wrote this for a Parisian audience. And there was a tremendous amount of investigation into the historical background of ancient Russian peoples for the Rite of Spring. And so this is a depiction in the ballet of the rituals that were enacted by pagan Russians.
I have a hard time picturing spring in Russia because I think of Russia as cold, like all the time.
That's probably partly what was behind Stravinsky and his colleagues' notion of Russia too, because the pagan Russia that they portray seems to have depicted nature as really a force to contend with, a violent force.
Something darker.
Very dark, and yet spring itself was also a time of course, the budding of various plants, and a sense that the world was coming to life again in all of its danger, violence, and fecundity. He writes a ballet that involves human sacrifice. The most famous part of the ballet is probably very near the beginning, where you have a very pulsating sense of life. While the pulse is consistent, you hear just a single chord, you can't tell when the next accent is going to come. This is the famous Dance of the Adolescents, and it shows something of the anxiety that still fills the culture. People know that in order for there to be life, there has to be death.
Are we going to hear from the person who I know is one of your favorites, Messiaen?
That's right, Olivier Messiaen. He made birdsong one of the most important components of virtually all of his music. And the first piece that he wrote entirely in what is called the bird style was devoted to spring. This is a piece called Rêver des Oiseaux, which means literally the birds awakening, but it's also how the French say dawn chorus. And the first words of the program note after the title are The Spring, and it depicts spring first between midnight and noon. And so you can imagine it begins rather softly because birds don't sing during the night. The next page you can see this long list of various birds.
Oh, cool. We got the nightingale, the little owl, the wryneck, woodlark, blackbird, and it just goes on and on for maybe 30 of them.
And there are more in other. There is no human presence in this piece, but there is a hidden presence of another force. And after staring at the first couple of pages for a long time, I discovered that every phrase of the piano is measured out to a duration of a prime number of 16th notes. Prime numbers, you might remember, can only be divided by one in themselves without creating fractions. The first phrase is 5/16th notes long, the second one also 5, then 11.
You've cracked the code.
I've cracked some kind of code here. What Messiaen is expressing in a very subtle way is another force at work in nature. The force for Messiaen, being a devout Catholic, was God. Why is God represented through prime numbers? Prime numbers are indivisible, and indivisibility is one of the primary attributes associated with a monotheistic God.
Now that you've taken me on this bit of a musical tour of spring, we're going to check out some spring in the making.
Sounds great.
Well, okay, so we're outside the building now. I hear some spring sounds.
We're going to the hill right up here. So CMU is right next to Schenley Park, and I'd like to go to this area called Flagstaff Hill. To me, this hill problematizes the idea that, you know, nature is pre-existing at all times and is always the same, as we tend to. Storms have always been storms, brooks have always been brooks. The problem is that this hill, which is large, has not always been here, and that we constructed it. And we constructed this hill the same way that Vivaldi, Stravinsky, and Messiaen have constructed their versions of nature, through ideas of what spring should be, of what birdsong might represent. This also reminds me of one of the great ideas that emerged in the early 1950s through the music of John Cage, who is probably best known for a piece called 433, which is just silence. This piece is designed to get us to pay attention to the ambient sounds in our environment and to treat the environment and its sounds as music at all times.
Well, I think that's a good ending point. Thanks very much.
It was great to be here. Thanks so much, Jennifer.
For the Allegheny Front, I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan, speaking with Rob Fallon, Carnegie Mellon University Assistant Professor of Musicology.